When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, we welcome into the studio B. Scott, Brandon K. Scott. He's from Hiram Clark. You will hear that mentioned very definitively in the next segment, but right now with B. Scott, we go around the NFL, which is brought to you by Quick Assist, your no-hassle solution reselling your tickets across every marketplace. Download Quick Assist from your app store today. That's QUICKASYST. Quick Assist, your ticket everywhere. And B. Scott, how'd you take in Monday Night Footballs?
It is the second straight week I'm gonna come in here and say the NFL and its broadcasting partners ought to be ashamed of themselves for putting some of that stuff that they put on TV last night, man. What were they thinking? That the audacity. Fortunately, we at least had an alternate game to pay attention to that did not include a Tyler Huntley-led Miami Dolphins team or any kind of combination of quarterbacks that the Tennessee Titans want to try out there, whether it be Mason Rudolph or Will Levis. The audacity of them to put that on TV. Just like the week before when I said the Jacksonville Jaguars should not have another nationally televised game. Yeah. Even if they do, they should not. Somebody should intervene. Same thing with this, man. This was awful.
I will argue that I don't think it was a good thing that we had an alternate broadcast, and I'll tell you why here in a second. But I did want to start with the idea that, I mean, I can't knock the NFL on at least the Dolphins, like on that Dolphins game, because they thought at least, hey, man, even at the Titans stink, we don't get these boys running up and down this field. Yeah. You don't get to watch Tyreek and put up to like 200 yards in receiving, except they got Snoop Huntley out here.
They thought.
Yeah.
is the key they phrase thought. There. They thought is the key phrase. They thought and they were wrong. So, yeah, man, no, I don't necessarily fault them, but I fought the experience.
Yeah, no.
I don't care who is to blame. It just should not have been.
I didn't get to see any of, well, get too cute. I didn't see any of the second half of this. John, how long did you last when it came to Titans?
I was flipping the whole time.
Oh, good for you.
I was flipping the whole time. And I'm not going to lie, I may have squeezed in a monk there at some point.
Oh, okay.
Just because I was out of it. Because that game was, man, if I'm a Dolphins fan, I am just beside myself. I mean, what happened? Like, that's the story to me. And then I put this in my notes. Will Levis is better at memes than football. He is. That face he made when he was stretching his shoulder. And then the one, I guess, down on the sideline, another meme that was making the rounds.
I mean, he is a meme at this point.
Think about it.
Not to derail it to AFC South, but the AFC South right now is full of, outside of CJ Stroud, full of meme-worthy type of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Like, however you want to take it or whatever angle you want to take on it, between Anthony Richardson, obviously Trevor Lawrence, and, of course, Will Levis, they are all, like, meme-worthy. And I would say, like, with the Dolphins, man, just since we're going around the NFL, I want to make this point about them. Bad job by them for not having a better plan at backup quarterback, knowing the issues with Tua. Like, you know how important he is to what you do. Forget what the conversation is around Tua and how good he is. They know how good he is and how important he is to what they do. And for them to not have a better backup plan for that or to that, to me, is negligence on their part.
I think there's a little bit of tightrope walking here, because you're not wrong, right? And it is worth noting that this is quarterback three, right? If any team gets to quarterback three, not going to look all that great necessarily. But Skylar Thompson, Wildcat.
But they didn't have a backup.
K-State, I respect. But, like, I understand. Like, that's not great.
That shouldn't have been your backup plan.
But the tightrope that you're walking here is you gave Tua money, which I think you would say, okay, well, cool. That establishes him. However, y'all see the way that people be talking about Tua. If you give them people, and you know what I mean when I say them people, just the people that are watching this team, particularly in Miami, right? If you give them people an opportunity to go, hey, that dude behind him, he should be playing. They are going to wear you out with that. We've seen that with many a quarterback, especially if there's one that people don't feel great about. And so I think that some of that was also finding a way to like win the outside noise of this all and not put additional pressure on Tua. Tua also being a quarterback that maybe, just maybe, might be a little fragile.
I'm not disputing none of that, but as a credit to Tua, I would say he's been better than that. So, like, despite all of that.
As evidenced by the fact that he's out and that thing fell over.
And when he played, like, he's been pretty good. Like, he has not been, I would say, phenomenal, but for what they're doing, somebody, you just need somebody that's accurate, that can get the ball out on time and can make the most out of these weapons. He has done that when he's been out on the field. So when he actually plays, there is no reason to be clamoring for the backup quarterback, especially if it's somebody like, say, Joe Flacco, like what the Indianapolis Colts did, or somebody along those lines.
Yeah,
there's no reason to be clamoring for another guy to play unless, again, of course, Tua is hurt and can't play.
Well, and then, part of the contract discussion is the concussions. I mean, you have to put that into the equation, which is another reason. I mean, you don't want to wish anything upon him, but it's there, which is another reason to have a better backup plan. You know, I think that ties in as much as anything with, we got to get a backup that we can rely on.
Yeah, and I think their opponent probably felt better about their backup situation.
Well, I think that that's an interesting thing that brings it back to Texans focus is, I think that with Mason Rudolph, clearly he's not as good or with like the talent wise as Will Levis, which probably says less about him and more about Will Levis, if we're going to be completely honest. But also, I do wonder if like Mason Rudolph can at least do the things that he's supposed to do in a way that Will Levis comically seemingly cannot. And does that then put with the defense that the Titans have and with the offensive line, a Bill Callahan offensive line that's just going to get out here and do exactly what you're supposed to do with the offensive line, back in that place where they are a nuisance again in the AFC?
Yeah, I think that is in play. It's a good point because the issue, I think, I'm with you, John. You mentioned this. You'd still rather have Anthony Richardson over Will Levis, but the thing that they have in common is they do a lot of really difficult things well, but a lot of the game is doing some of the simple stuff, and they're horrible at it. Like, it's the exact opposite. Like, they don't do it well at all. Whereas with Mason Rudolph, maybe you can have a more measured plan. Hey, we're going to try to run. They got a good run game.
Yeah.
Their offensive line is young and not very good in pass protection, but fairly decent run blocking. So, can they be true to the traditional Titan identity of a bully ball type of team? Or is that their closest, you know, form of winning? Yes, I think so.
I think there's an argument to be made that you can be more scared of the Titans now without Will Levis, depending on you know, where he is, because they still have the number one defense in the NFL today. Like after 4 weeks, they have the number one defense
on yardage,
yards per game. And so there's that. And then there's the offensive line, kind of to your point. You know what? Let's change our identity. You know, this guy can't throw a hit the broadside of a barn, you know?
You can't be scared of the Titans, though. They're just...
No. A nuisance is the way he put it.
Yeah, I was going to say. And I think, just to kind of bring it to the Texans for a second, I think that this is another highlight of their opportunity. Like, we're having a conversation. Are the Titans better off with Mason Rudolph than they are with the guy that they drafted and tried to build their team around? That is an excellent position to be in, even if you're a Texans team that's leading the league in penalties and beating yourself even in victory. Like, that is ideal, I would say.
So when it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays? The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Oh, I got a chance to, when I was watching Monday Night Football, I was doing that in Stafford, Legacy Cigar Lounge, man. Them people treated the boys right. I know Sean was out there hanging out with the people, and I was like, I'll hang out too. I want to do that.
Y'all were up the street from me then. I too was in Stafford.
I should have hit you up then.
But at home.
Oh, I should have hit you up then. My bad. Larry Stafford popped out. That was fun. But one of the things Larry, me and him were talking about was watching Lions Seahawks, where the Lions won 42-29. What was y'all's big takeaway? Because for us, it was a thing that we were longing for and seeing both the Seahawks and Lions team do.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm interested in your thoughts, B. Scott, because as it pertains to the Texans, I thought this game pertained to the Texans much more. Because the Lions clearly are further along in their development in this era of Lions football, but they look like the team that the Texans should look like. They were they haven't always been perfect, but they don't make mistakes. They have a quarterback that is incredibly efficient. They have, you know, talent everywhere. They can run the ball. They can throw the ball. They can set up one with the other and vice versa. Like, to me, the Lions are what I thought the Texans would look like this first four games.
Yeah, there's really one real big thing that stands out about the Lions that the Texans don't have that I so wish they did, or I think fans would feel so much more comfortable about them if they had this. And after week one, I think they did feel like there was potential
for
this before you knew that the Colts were the Colts.
Here it is.
But did you see how the Lions just dominated the line of scrimmage?
Yeah.
That's it. That's it.
How they just dumped it. I mean, they're parting the Red Sea, yeah. Except it's blue.
Yeah.
And they're out there making it happen, man. Like, guys, 8, 9, 10 yards down the field. Those mm-hmm. Now, they got two really good running backs. That's probably what they have that the Texans just cannot say that they have right now. Two dynamic running backs. They got Joe Mixon, who's been injured. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, they got a decent Cam Akers. They got an injured Damian Pierce and an injured Joe Mixon. Like, your running back room is not whole. In the way that between David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, I mean, that is top of the line 1-2 punch right there mm-hmm. with the Lions guy. And then the offensive line simply does not compare.
In
terms of talent,
dominance
across the board. Like, yeah. They look better, more cohesive, everything about it, better coached. All of it looks better. And so I feel like Texans fans, I don't know how you could watch that game and watch the Lions operate the way they did and not have a little envy. Or at least desire that out of your own football team.
You say the Lions, and the Lions are the easy one, right? We've been talking about them for the last few years as having one of, if not the best, offensive line in the NFL. How about the Seahawks ripping off these runs as well? Because they had 133 yards rushing themselves. They actually had more rushing yards and a better average of rushing than the Lions in this game. It was just looking back and forth at the ways that these teams were able to move the ball up and down on each other, mind you, right? Yeah. So maybe the defenses have a little something to talk about. But like up and down, you saw the ways that both these teams could throw the football, but running the football, being associated with it and doing it well. That was definitely the thing where it was like, man, I'm longing for it. And with the offensive line point, it brings me back to the idea that you have so much capital tied up in this offensive line. And it's frustrating that you're not getting the offensive run push that you should get. Or maybe not even to the level of these ones, but anywhere near what these two teams gave you.
Every starting offensive lineman for the Texans is either on a second or third contract, on a multi-contract at this point,
mm-hmm.
or a premium pick. A first or second round pick. So, like, that's the investment. Last year, and we could up to last year, they were most invested in the offensive line.
Yeah.
And they brought all those guys back. Okay. And their whole. So, like, to watch it, I think, and you made the point about, Reggie, about the fact that the Seahawks and the Lions can both throw the ball. That's irritating, too, because the Texans have the quarterback. Like, you have a quarterback that can, at the very least, can match what their quarterbacks can do. And in most cases, you think is better. Like, you think C.J. Stroud is probably better than Jared Goff, better than Geno Smith, certainly. So you've got the quarterback. You've got a star stud receiver in Nico Collins mm-hmm. who's only emerging more and more as a star. Why can't you have this basic principle in the game that maybe isn't as basic as I'm making it seem, but certainly something that they've invested in and you would think you'd have a lot more production out of.
ROI is just not there. Yeah. And that's going to be the story if this continues because, like I said, I was looking at the Lions like thinking that's how the Texans should look, and I didn't even mention the offensive line, so I'm glad you did, B. Scott, because that's as big as anything. Like what they're doing and the way they've invested in that and the way they're producing on that investment.
It's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
It's the biggest thing. I keep going back to week one. And, man, it stood out to me because I did not think the offensive line was great in pass protection. C.J. Stroud was running for his life.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the run game, they had some good moments. And maybe even more specifically, I'd say there were a couple of players that stood out in the run game. But really, you go back at that, Joe Mixon, 158 yards, but 101 on yards after contact.
Yeah.
Like, that was really a big Joe Mixon game. That was really a Joe Mixon himself shouting out Kay Stover in some moments of freeing him up on some blocks. I know Kenyon Green had a standout game. Drew Scruggs had some moments.
That was his standout game for the season thus far.
Right? Yeah, for sure, because it has not been as good since then.
Yeah.
But really, overall, I just did not feel the way the narrative was after that game, and it's kind of run true, my feeling, I would say, since then.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because I'd like for that to have been the mm-hmm. case, but the offensive line just has not figured it out yet.
Yeah, it was an individual brilliance game more than it was an entire offense game. Some funny things about this outside of like the Texans, you know, view that we put on it. Geno Smith, do you know how many pass attempts he had during the course of this game?
Not offhand.
56 pass attempts.
He was out there dealing.
Yeah.
Geno looked good.
Yeah.
Good, man. And Geno was another one of those. Shout out to the redemption quarterbacks.
Yes.
Two of them playing against each other in this game. Jared Goff, Geno Smith. You got Baker Mayfield doing his thing. Sam Darnold at the Texans' expense, I know, a couple of weeks ago now.
Yeah. That is actually a conversation that I want to have. It's just like, is that
draft new, class?
Not just the draft class, but is that the new space to be in? Is that redemption quarterback where maybe you can get one at a little bit better odds, better money, and get yourself a good space?
And Goff, 18 for 18.
That was the other part, was that you had one guy, 56 passes, the other side, 18, and he hit all of them. In fact, I don't even know if his head coach knew that he was playing at this level of perfection. This was Dan Campbell when asked about it.
Yeah, well, I just gave the game ball to somebody else, so I feel awful right now. I knew he played a heck of a game. I did not realize he was perfect. I did not know he was literally 18 for 18. But I knew he played really well. You could feel it.
He's taking him for granted, which is another sign of how good this team is. He's like, oh, really? 18 for 18?
Hey, if Jared Goff did not have a problem with not getting the game ball and his head coach not realizing he was 18 for 18 in a victory, he is a solid dude.
That's what I'm saying.
He seems to be a solid dude.
That is a solid dude.
Yeah.
For real.
I mean, that's a dude that's already felt like he was abandoned by his first team. So I feel like he has no choice but to be solid in his mindset. But there you go. That's Around the NFL, again, brought to you by Quick Assist here in the Loop, and we got our guy B. Scott All Hour. So you know what we got to do. We got to make the most of this and get into B. Scott's thoughts. We'll do that next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
In studio, All Hour as he typically is on a Tuesday. Our guy, Brandon K. Scott, don't forget the K. B. Scott for short, but he is indeed from Hiram Clark, and he represents Hiram Clark and Sports Radio 610. We appreciate you, my man.
That is right. Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all for having me, man.
Man, I would have you all week if I could. It's always fun, man. That was a fun discussion just around the NFL, talking about the games that we saw yesterday. But let's get even more Texans focused, why don't we? And let's get into your thoughts. Well, what you got on the table right now?
So I don't want to be the dude that complains about everything after a win. And so with that, I would point out in this game, CJ Stroud, brilliant. Like, if you didn't already feel great about CJ Stroud, and how could you not? This would be a case in point game to point to, like, why do you think CJ Stroud's so good? Why is he so okay?
Yeah.
Here's Tampa from last year. Here's Cincinnati from last year. Here's the playoff game. Here's this game. All right. Another data point for CJ Stroud. So check that box. Quarterback looks elite, looked elite in this game. Nico Collins, we mentioned that in the previous segment, but emerging as a legitimate star. I think it was it either D'Amico or one of those guys after the game, kind of giving him politicking for all pro. I know we're only a few games through the season, but he's playing like that type of player. They got some things going for them. Shout out to Kalen Bullock for saving points at times.
Yeah.
Right? Like they had some moments and some players that made plays. Daria Gumbawale, not just the touchdown, but a couple of plays that he made that, I'm going to be honest, I ain't know Daria had
it. I didn't either.
I think I might have turned it. It was probably next to Bijani, I think, at that point.
At that point, I had left. I was in the suite when this when this play happened, but I know which one you're talking about. When he gave that little shake, gave him that little jump cut, I was like, okay.
Yeah, I told Bijani, I was like, I didn't know he had that wiggle to him. Okay. My Nigerian brethren, I should have known. The hips. We got it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And I did not know it. So credit to him and credit to everybody that played really well in the win. But the Texans got a cornerback problem, man.
They do.
Like, they have a serious cornerback problem.
Or DB.
I would say, that's fair. DB, but I would specifically point at cornerbacks wherever, I'm not going to say not name Derek Stingley, but wherever Derek Stingley isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And even him at times, doesn't always necessarily give you the exact effort that you're looking for, even though at the end he seems to make plays. Like he seems to be like that big time when the money's on the line type of player, Derek Stingley. Like he gets up for that. So I'll take that.
Mm-hmm.
But everything outside of him seems to be a little bit problematic to me. They don't really have a slot corner. They've been able to operate with Jalen Petrie playing in that role, but really serving as a third linebacker, correct, but just a hybrid, mm-hmm, linebacker defensive back that does linebacker and
defense. Linebacker safety, really.
I mean, he's really a tweener.
Yeah.
He's really a tweener of a linebacker and safety, but certainly, and this is not an offense to him because I like Jalen Petrie, everything he stands for, but he's certainly not a slot corner. He's not a cornerback in any kind of sense of the imagination. He's just a hybrid type of player that allows you to do multiple things, and they've been able to get away with it. But now we've seen 2 weeks in a row what happens when the opposing team's best offensive weapon, their best wide receiver, is somebody that they move around and specifically allow to operate in the slot. Obviously, Justin Jefferson is an anomaly. He can do anything, anywhere. But Christian Kirk is also specific of, hey, we put him in the slot, and we're going to put our best wide receiver against a dude who's functionally a safety kind of hybrid linebacker. Like, what that is, to me, that's foreshadowing an issue for this team going forward if they don't address it in some form or fashion. And the problem for me is I don't really know what the solution is there, because this is kind of a personal.
You're 100% right. I'm glad you brought this up, because I actually had this in my passing thoughts and I never got to it yesterday. Like I said, coaches are going to pick that scab all year long.
I mean, we had this conversation.
Yeah, last week.
And we were like, Justin Jefferson might be exposing a weakness.
They're going to pick and pick and pick and pick. And then the other thing, the second part to that I had, and you guys know how I feel about Kamari Lassiter. As soon as I laid eyes on that cat, I was like, this is a dude. Ball skills off the charts. But make no mistake, and I know you guys noticed this, they were testing that 4-6. They were trying to get him moving and you know, with some fast dudes, and they were testing that 4-6, and he failed it a couple of times, but Trevor Lawrence failed more.
Testing the 4-6 and the eyes, right?
Yeah.
Knowing that you know that you have a 4-6 when it comes to the 40. Hey, are you going to bite on this double move?
Yeah.
You going to bite on this double move because you have to recover? Okay, we got you.
Yeah. And catching, like you said, and that, to me, that's the eyes and the, I wouldn't even say the 4-6, but.
No, they were trying to get him moving.
But I think it's a little bit of the 4-6, because when you're flat, when you get caught flat-footed, okay, how fast is your recovery speed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how fast can you make up for that? I think Derek Stingley is kind of the opposite of this. It's like, you might be able to catch him flat-footed, and maybe he can recover a little bit better, make it not look as, maybe not get beat as bad, make it a little bit more of a competitive play. But Kamari Lassiter, we saw that with rookie on rookie, with Brian Thomas.
Yeah.
When he gave him that double move.
Yep.
And look.
And then Trevor Lawrence tried to give it to the people in the third row.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah, yeah. And he did that a couple of times.
That's what I'm saying. There were other ones, too, where I'm like, he's a step behind.
So this is my thought on that. And I had a little bit of this kind of during training camp as we're moving along. It's like, this is cool. This Kamari Lassiter story is cool, and I like what I see. And I appreciate that the Texans like what they see immediately, like on site. This dude is ready to start straight out of Georgia. Cool. But it did say something to me that he was able to so quickly and so decisively beat out veteran players. Like, they brought in veteran guys to compete for that job. And I was not sold on the idea when he got drafted that he would be able to just immediately.
We thought he might be a nickel.
I thought he might be a nickel. I thought he might be a backup, somebody that might play, but kind of in a rotational way, similar to how Kalen Bullock is at safety. Like, somebody they want to play, but they got these veterans that they're going to rely on. To me, it said a lot about, I thought at least that it said a lot about the veterans that they brought in, but with Kamari Lassiter, I'm like, man, is he really this good, or is it really the veterans themselves that aren't necessarily up to snuff or clearly as good as they wanted them to be?
As it is in a lot of situations, it's probably all of the above to some degree, right? Like, all of those things factor in within this. And so I think the question then becomes, like, where can you maybe find some help in that regard? But I also don't want to sneak past one of the things that was a small thing, if you were not super aware of it during the course of this game against the Jaguars, which was this team blitzed more. And when you blitz, that's going to ask more of your defensive backs in those circumstances, where you can get got on some of those open things. But the problem is the give and take, because it's zero sum, right? If you are applying that pressure blitz, you can't use it coverage. when you blitz and you apply that added resources to blitzing, you need to get home.
They didn't. Yeah.
Right. When you blitz about half the time and you get home about a quarter of the time, that is a problem.
Yeah. And that, so that goes into the reason why I thought at least this would be mitigated, because I figured, oh, they're going to cause enough problems. They're going to cause enough disruption up front to where this isn't going to be, I don't know how much they're going to be exposed for this, but what if they don't? Right. Like,
yeah,
that's predicated on, yeah, on an assumption there of me saying, hey, like, this is going to happen. But what if they don't? What if the plan is, like, what if I'm saying they're great up front? Doesn't matter if they're leaky on the back end, they're going to get home. All right. Well, what if they don't? Or the plan is, okay, we're just going to get the ball out quick, and our best dude is going to be lined up in the slot. So all his stuff is going to be,
yeah,
quick, short to intermediate stuff,
yeah,
where I don't have to. We don't have to pass pro forever. I don't have to, like, make it up. You know, like, it's just going to be there because their weakness actually is right there.
Well, their weakness is coverage. I think Petrie, yeah, actually is good at rallying to the football in those situations. Yeah, well,
that, and that's what I mean. Their weakness is coverage. And kind of back to Lopez's point about DBs.
Yeah.
You know, DBs not named Derek Stingley, I would say, and even Derek Stingley to some degree at times. But really, it's... They've got a really good football player, I think, in Jalen Petrie.
Yes.
They don't have a slot corner on the team.
And exactly. I think it's maybe less of a Petrie issue in himself, but he represents, or he is indicative of the issue that they have on the team. I think that's a great point.
I think it's a sign, too, because you know this. I mean, D'Amico Ryans generally doesn't blitz a lot. Was it the Vikings game he blitzed a lot?
Yeah.
This game he blitzed a lot. Is that because, hey, we got to help our guys back there all we can? And it worked to a certain degree, even though they got blown out against the Vikings. Didn't work this time.
Yeah, but again, because their best strategy of winning defensively is on the front end and not the back end. It's causing havoc and problems at the beginning of the play and not necessarily bailing the defense out on the back end of the play. That's not the strength of the team right now.
From 832, go find Steven Nelson. Someone else mentioned activate Dez King. On the first one, Steven Nelson, would the vibes work?
Nah, Steven Nelson has taken a new mantra, or I should say a new aura and role as Twitter fingers, Twitter man. Like, he is the Twitter commenter. You can watch the game broadcast and just put up Steven Nelson's Twitter feed if you like a hot mess.
That's a simulcast. We not watching the Manning cast, we watching the Nelson cast. Is that what you're saying?
Boy, let me tell you, it is some entertaining stuff.
So yeah, that what those answers might be. I know Dez King, that was one of the reasons I imagine he was brought back, is for that possibility, but they haven't made him active yet. So that's going to be an interesting space to continue to watch with these Texans. A little bit of B. Scott's thoughts here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. In fact, coming up next, B. Scott's still with us, as it's a Texans ticket giveaway Tuesday. We will give those away in the noon o'clock hour. But coming up next, let's get into what's popping as a sports talk legend, and of course, a legend in baseball past, and Astros playing baseball today, baby.
How about that?
Let's talk about all that next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
All right, what's poppin' in the Loop? Sports Radio 610. We have in our always Tuesday guest at 11, or in the 11 o'clock hour, that is B. Scott. Let's talk about what's poppin'. And one of the things that is poppin' in the city of Houston is postseason play. Wild Card Series begins today. It is a day game, as all of these games in the Wild Card Series will be. 1:32 first pitch at Minute Maid Park. ABC is where you got to see it if you need to see it. And what's going to happen is you have Framber Valdez going against Tarek Skubal. What's your confidence level going into this? Because I've already doubled and tripled down that I'm not actually afraid of these Tigers.
Yeah, no, I'm not afraid at all. I'm pretty confident in the Astros. My question has always been, how do the Astros measure up against, let's say, the Yankees and the Guardians of the world? I'm going to be real with you with the Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
They're their own story right now, because I had buried them about, I don't know, six or seven weeks ago. I did not think that was a postseason team. And you look at what they've done over the last couple of months or so, and it's really a great story. They've really been really good. But, man, I can't unsee what the Astros did to them when they played them earlier in the
mm-hmm.
season. And I cannot get to a point where I think that the Tigers are good enough, albeit a young upstart type of team, that they're good enough to beat these Astros. Now, Skubal, got us on the mound today is obviously a Cy Young type.
He's going to win it.
Yeah. Your best left-hander, and obviously going to win the Cy Young.
Yeah.
Best in the American League this year. So, I mean, today could obviously be an issue, and I'll be there in about an hour as soon as I leave here. I'm looking forward to that. So he scares me a little bit, but outside of that, the team overall, I would say no.
Look, everybody talks about Skubal, rightfully so, you know, with what he's done. I think the game two starter, no matter what happens, Montero for the Tigers, their Montero, has really come on in the last month. I think he's had four outings with a shutout, six outings with two runs or less that he's given up. So the whole thing about A.J. Hinch, and A.J. Hinch is a factor. A.J. Hinch is an absolute fact. He's got the decided edge, like a decided edge on Joe Espada. But I think that whole thing about, oh, it's going to be chaos after game one. I bet you it's going to be Montero, and they're going to try to ride him for as long as they can and then just mix and match, throw everybody at the Astros.
If there's something to be afraid of, it is that the Tigers have the pitching to have the Astros produce one of those, hey, what happened to the Astros bats? I thought this was a prolific offense. I thought it was one of the top, you know, I thought it was one of the top offenses in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. And they have those lulls. The Tigers do have a pitching staff that can induce that.
Yeah. Right?
So, like, you do have to be mindful of that. But, man, I just think that the Astros, especially, like, hearing that Yordan Alvarez is on the roster and is going to be DHing today and everything, like, to me, they are the better baseball team.
Yeah.
Obviously, okay, because we've seen them lose to teams that they're better than. Like, they could lose this series, man.
Play the games on paper, or not on paper, rather.
But yeah, exactly. You don't play the games on paper.
There it is. That's the way you say it.
But if I'm going to analyze it on paper, Astros should be the better baseball
team. Can I give you more paper?
Yeah.
It is Reggie's stats segment, I guess.
Can't win it on paper.
Right.
Here's paper.
Here's more paper for you. Paper pusher. But you mentioned the idea that the Tigers have pitching. They absolutely do in a great way. The problem is, can they put runs on the board, right? Like, they have two hitters that you really have to care about, one of them being Riley Green.
Yeah.
Both of them lefties. And they don't hit lefties all that well. And, oh, here comes Framber Valdez, right? Yeah. Like, that comes up. On top of that, the Tigers are, I mean, bottom third in home runs. And I was reading something.
They do not hit home runs.
Like, oddly enough, first in triple, and that's just in September, I should mention, right? All these stats I'm giving you are just from September when they've been hottest, right? When they've kind of gotten on their run. So I'm trying to make sure that I keep this as accurate as possible for what we're going to see. And they are first in triples, but that's in part because that's a big ballpark that they're dealing with in Comerica. So maybe that gives them an opportunity to hit some home runs. I don't know, but they were 23rd in home runs, right? So, like, this is not a home run hitting team. And when I was reading something in Fangraphs, one of the things that they were talking about was possibly a predictor of offensive success in the postseason is teams that hit home runs. Because if you think of a team that kind of builds an inning, some singles, maybe a double here and there, what is the likelihood that against the best pitchers, as we are, you know, filtering out in the postseason, that you're going to get three or four hits in the course of an inning or a stretch to get you some runs, as opposed to you caught a pitcher slacking one time and you send one over the fence? And I think that situation definitely puts the Astros in an advantageous place compared to the Tigers.
Well, this is a classic Styles make fights type of argument too, though, because I liked Lopez's point earlier about what kind of Framber are we going to get. I think you said that.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to come down, what Framber can we expect today? And I'm even just going to try to focus on today. You know, living today, living the moment with Framber. And this point that you're making, Reggie, about them not being a home run team, Framber being a ground ball pitcher.
Well, we're going to find out real quick. First three innings, we're going to know.
Something's got to give, man. Something's got to give here. Like, is this going to be one of those games where Framber's got traffic and then he's bailing himself out with the ground ball, you know, with the double play and relying on the Astros defense that is not as good as it used to be in previous years, but you still feel like you can rely on for the most part behind Framber Valdez? Like, is it going to be that type of game, or is he going to go out there and be his own version of his Cy Young self? I know he's never won a Cy Young, but he's had like those flashes, those moments, obviously has a no-hitter. Like, is he going to be that type of Framber, or the one that's bailing himself out of his own messes?
It's the story of game one is these two pitchers, but especially how Framber responds, because he's never been given the ball by the manager for game one. You know, he has, but I'm saying he hasn't been the ace.
It has not been in this realm. I think it was leaning that way last year, but Verlander had just come back in the trade. I think it was kind of close, but this year is definitive.
It's definitive. Yeah. He's the ace, and how does he, and he's you know, to his credit, he's been absolutely nails in big situations. On the other hand, he's been like, oh man, in his own head so much. You know, we've seen that way too often.
So just to state this explicitly, if you did not get the news earlier, Yordan Álvarez is on the wild card roster, and he is in the lineup. He's DHing, which I imagine you can go ahead and pencil in for the remainder of his time, maybe in the postseason, honestly. But he's DHing, hitting second. So he's back in that spot where I know that there's been some conversation and consternation about, you know, him liking to see more pitches so that he has an opportunity to really be successful on that first at bat. But I imagine it's just get him as many at bats as possible.
Yeah.
But you mentioned no hitters. This is where I come to Ronel Blanco, and he's in the news a little bit because the Houston chapter of the Baseball Writers Association of America announced their 2024 Astros Award winners, and that is your Pitcher of the Year, Ronel Blanco. So he gets that. Yordan Álvarez is your MVP for the Astros. Rookie of the Year, Spencer Urquidy. And then the Daryl Kyle Good Guy of the Year, Mauricio Dubon,
For sure.
Anybody else in contention in that point?
They got a few good guys, but Mauricio Dubon is...
The goodest of guys.
Well, I mean, this is like a media type award. So, like, he is the type that you can just walk up to and has always been this way.
Yeah.
So, like, that doesn't surprise me at all. I would say, though, on the Ronel Blanco thing, not MVP, but you do not get here without Ronel Blanco.
Oh, no way.
The Astros are not in this position without Ronel Blanco.
Or Kikuchi, for that matter.
And certainly not without Kikuchi. And obviously, that's more of a recent thing because, you know, that happens after the trade deadline.
Yeah.
But Ronel Blanco emerging as not just a viable starter, but a surprise as your best starter for a little while until Hunter Brown was able to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hunter Brown took that over for a little while. Spencer Urquidy had a flash where it seemed like he was that. And oh, by the way, we're not even talking about your ace in Framber Valdez. Like, it is how they were able to stagger with their young pitchers, starting with Ronel Blanco.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to stagger like elite performances
one after another
at various points of the season between those guys that got them here. They're not here without any of those guys, but it's, to me, it starts with Ronel Blanco.
And by the way, I don't know if you mentioned Yordan is the MVP of the squad.
Yes, right.
But it could have been Kyle Tucker if not for the injury, because Kyle Tucker was in the hunt for MVP of the league for long stretches, I think. So I'm with you. They're clearly the better team. They clearly should win, but there are some... We got to watch this to see how it plays out.
Yeah, the MVP is, if you have an elite player who plays every day, a Yordan, a Kyle Tucker, that's going to be the MVP. But make no mistake about it.
Yeah.
Like, the value going down the line, starting with Ronel Blanco to Hunter Brown figuring his stuff out and Spencer Urquidy figuring his stuff out.
Yeah.
Them guys working through it. They are not here without it.
No, and I guess you mentioned Yordan, we mentioned Kyle Tucker, and I got to admit, I guess I lied unintentionally, as about 30 minutes ago, we got a little shift in the lineup, and Yordan will be batting third. Kyle Tucker steps into that second spot.
So that surprises me.
They swapped those guys.
That surprises me because that was one of the big conversation pieces, as you mentioned, to start the season. You know, it was going to be the big adjustment, the change. Before we actually got to see Joe Espada work, the one change that we knew right away was that he wanted to bat Yordan second more often.
Yeah.
And that's where that conversation starts. Should he not? Like, you know, back and forth. So I'm surprised by that, because I know that's something that they wanted to do early in the season and that they have done throughout. So
there we go. Astros get going at 1:32 in game one of the wild card series versus the Tigers at Minute Maid Park. Our guy, B. Scott, once we let go of you here in a second, you will get to work in that regard and head out that way. And of course, Baseball Spo already on the ground out there. Another thing that's popping, yesterday we learned of the passing of a sports talk legend, because he gave you a topic that you could always run out here, but it's because he was such a good
pros make the Hall of Fame.
Such a great baseball player, even though he had the scandal that was in Pete Rose. He passed away. I mean, Lopez, you got an opportunity to see, obviously, a lot of this unfurl. Like, what was your impression? What was your first thought when you found out?
Well, I never got a chance to cover him in Major League Baseball. He retired in '86. I really got into the business about that time and wasn't covering Major League Baseball. But I've spoken with him several times. And I keep going back, and I actually saw a graphic earlier that was along these same lines. So 1969 was the greatest year in pitching. Yes, nice. Mm-hmm. In baseball history, Bob Gibson had a 2.1 ERA. 30 pitchers had an ERA under 3. Think about that.
That's wild.
Denny McClain won 31 games. The MLB batting average was 233. Pete Rose hit 338. That I always go back to that. I mean, you can talk about 17 All-Star games and, you know, all the Charlie Hustle.
Yeah.
And you're never going to see a player like that, you know, running to first base for walks and all that. The greatest year in pitching was absurdly good. He batted 338.
Appropriately in 1969.
Yes.
Because that's upside down.
Yeah. Like that is, I think that's the thing that's kind of sad about the legacy of Pete Rose is that it will be just the kind of the way I interested. It's always about the gambling on betting on baseball scandal as opposed to just how incredible of a baseball player he ultimately really was. And he leaned into it. And I appreciate it on some level as understanding that this is what it is, right?
Great to talk
about. But hey, man, it kind of sucks that he's obscured by, or you know, his real accomplishment is obscured by that.
Yeah. I wish we didn't have to be so dense though and have to obscure it. Like, I wish we could be able to, like, appreciate both or talk about all of it in its proper context, because he bet on baseball and that's, you know, that part of it is sleazy, but at the same time, none of that takes away from the talent that he was.
I'm glad you brought that up, because we, you know, there are alcoholics that have made the Hall of Fame. Alcoholism
worse.
And worse. Drug addicts that have made the Hall of Fame.
Oh, we can get even worse.
Alcoholism is a
disease. I'm not going to force you to go there.
But people say alcoholism is a disease, right?
Twitter world.
But they still made the Hall of Fame. Drug addiction is a disease, people call it. And I don't disagree. And they're still in the Hall of Fame. Gambling is a disease. Compulsive gambling is a disease. Why isn't he in the Hall of Fame? And oh, by the way, when you watch the game today, you're going to see a commercial for MGM Grand. You're going to see a commercial for BetMGM, and you're going to see a commercial for FanDuel.
Pete Rose, ahead of his time.
On the game today. You're going to see it.
Never wrong, just early. Pete Rose, MVP, 17-time All-Star, 2-time Gold Glover, Rookie of the Year.
Should he?
No, 3-time World Series champion, 3-time batting title, a Silver Slugger, all of those, man. Like, incredible baseball player. And on top of all that, a fascinating personality as well. Passed away at the age of 83 rather. People asking, what about Dikembe Mutombo? Obviously we mentioned that yesterday, but again, we'll salute the big man, the Rockets legend, the NBA Hall of Famer, the Naismith Hall of Famer, and then just incredible guy.
That's a big sports obit day for those two to find out about those two in the same day. I mean, that's huge.
Not gonna lie, that started getting me, you know, the rule of threes. I was like, oh god.
Yeah,
you start bracing yourself, head on a swivel, like, please don't let nobody be next.
Yeah. Just want to remind you, our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and get a great deal on the iPhone 16 Pro. B. Scott, we appreciate you hanging out with us as you always do on Tuesday. It's always a blast, brother.
Yes, sir.
All right. Enjoy your time out there at Minute Maid Park.
Man.
We will be watching the game from here. Want to get started at 1:32 p.m. But coming up next, let's get back to this Texans team. We found a little optimism during the course of the first 2 hours of this show. However, we don't want to ignore in victory what you would obviously focus on in defeat. So where is the biggest worry for this Texans team moving forward? 713-572-4610. Let's break that down next.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays? The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.